well. How are you?
You look ready.
Yay!
We have quorum.
Okay.
I think.
Welcome this afternoon to House Committee on Judiciary. It happens to be April 21st, and it is 2 minutes after 3 p.m. And we're going to take one of the bills out of order in the agenda today, and we're going to open up a public hearing and a work session on Senate Bill 343.
Yes, Chair Olson, members of the committee. Senate Bill 343 comes to us at the request of the Senate Interim Committee on Judiciary. We have no revenue impact and a small fiscal impact on this bill with no statement issued. So we had a one nay vote before the Senate Judiciary Committee that was changed on the floor, and this bill did pass the full Senate chamber with one nay vote. We don't have any amendments before us today. In 2011, the Legislative Assembly passed Senate Bill 412, which provides tribal law enforcement officers in Oregon the same arrest and police powers as other state, local, and special police officers. At that time, the Senate bill was passed and sunset provision was put in place. Senate Bill 343 now repeals the sunset provision contained in Senate Bill 412.
Okay, so I think, Senator Roblin, you want to let you come on up and get the ball rolling, and then invite the four members representing the tribes come up then afterwards. And then please, if you'd identify yourself.
For the record, I'm Senator Arne Roblin from House Senate District. I was going to go back to my house since I'm over here in the House Committee. In Senate District 5. So it goes from Coos Bay to Tillamook Bay and over into Sheridan and Falls City. So I'm here because this was a bill which I cared about a lot back in the session when the 412 was passed, and I remember having the great opportunity to work with Representative Olson and make sure that a lot of the I's were dotted and T's were crossed to have an opportunity on the floor for this bill. It really basically acknowledges the relationship between the state and our tribes, in particular with regard to their sovereignty and how we go about doing things. And I anticipated that what happened would happen, and that is that the tribal police would get all the same training that our local police have, and that they would add a level of safety to our communities because they could respond to things that were outside when other police officers wanted them. It also allowed for ongoing conversations between all of the police agencies in a particular area. We had to make sure that those tribes on both sides of the state, as you know, there's a group of tribes that have become reinstated. They had different relationships as the tribes on the east side. To make sure that those individual differences allowed for each party to decide if they wanted to be a part of this. So it was a decision that had to be made by the tribes and our local law enforcement. And what has happened over that time is those agencies have grown dependent on each other. They have worked well as they move forward. They have developed relationships between them. We had a funeral in North Bend just this last weekend with an officer who was killed in the line of duty, who was then a deputy sheriff, but who had worked for the police departments of Myrtle Point, Reedsport, one of the tribes, and then to the county. And so it is this training and the understanding and working with each other that it continues to grow, and I think it's made public safety better for all of our communities, especially in rural areas where we've had a difficult time with our state police and others, knowing that these other people will respond and that they have been trained the same way so that they are professional police staffs all across has been really heartening to me. I am pleased that we are here having conversation to remove the sunset and the fact that it has worked out. And I think you're going to hear a lot from law enforcement agencies across the state as well as tribal members about how well this particular project has worked and how it continues to grow the really amazing relationship Oregon, the state, has with our nine tribes. So with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions you might have. Encourage you to pass this and to I'll go along. So thank you.
Representative Post.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Roblin, just a quick question. This is just because you're over there on that side and
you might hear things are going. The only question that I had, it really isn't about the policy or anything. I was just curious, maybe if you know offhand, why Senator Thatcher was a no in the committee and then yes on the floor. Was anything said? I'm just curious. If you hadn't heard.
I wasn't there when they were voting. I don't know. She might have wanted personally to check with tribes in her region and with their local police officers before she made the decision. I don't know that for a fact.
Just curious. Thank you.
I mean, I have to admit, there was, you know, Senator Roblin, there seemed to be a lot of concern there 4 years ago. It just hasn't seemed to surface.
It was very, that particular bill back 4 years ago was very contentious, and there were a lot of conversations back and forth. It was an interesting contentiousness because it wasn't a Democrat-Republican contention. It was different people and their different relationships and how this was all going to work, and would the training be the same so that they really could interact with each other safely? All those things were concerns. I think they've proven that everybody goes through the same training, everybody does understands the same stuff, and they have figured how to make that work and to the benefit of everybody.
Okay, any other questions? So just really quickly, are you in a position to be able to stay through this testimony, or we can suspend?
I am. I am. Yep.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
So if I could have Woodrow Starr, Howard, Arriet, Mitch Hicks, and Bradley Knieper come up, all four of you at the same time, that'd be great.
I guess I'll start.
Yeah, if you'd identify yourself first, that'd be great.
Sure. Mr. Vice Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bradley Knieper. I'm the Chief of Law Enforcement Officer for the Confederated Tribes of the Coos, Loram, Kwan, Saisla Indians. I've been in law enforcement for a little over 28 years, 17 of that with the Oregon State Police. I'm going to keep my verbal testimony brief, I promise. We respectfully ask you to pass Senate Bill 343. This bill repeals the sunset clause currently threatening continuation in force of Senate Bill 412 from 2011. This bill, 412, has improved public safety for the people of my tribe and for all the tribe's friends and neighbors in Lane, Douglas, and Coos counties, and I'm aware of no difficulties arising from its implementation. Like all law enforcement agencies, we emphasize law enforcement on our own lands, but we are able to leave our lands when we need to, and we travel a lot between areas. Excuse me. We have tribal lands in Coos County and Lane County, so we travel between those two areas approximately 50 to 60 miles, and we do that on a routine basis. And prior to 412, when we'd come across something, which we frequently do, anything from wanted persons, DUIs, traffic accidents, domestic violence, all kinds of things, we would have to, if we had to, we would stay and try to stabilize it and then try to call for other law enforcement, which isn't always available. After 412, we're able to take action when we need to. We still call for the appropriate jurisdiction. If they're not available, then we can take action if necessary. In addition to law enforcement on our tribal lands, Senate Bill 412 has allowed us to develop partnerships with local neighboring agencies without the problematic issues of agreements that give us law enforcement jurisdiction. That has greatly improved our relationships, and it's not a problem. Frankly, if I was a sheriff or a chief of police, I don't know that I would want to deputize somebody from another law enforcement agency. And I guess that's about all I need to say. So I will close with that, and thank you for your time.
Okay, thanks.
Good afternoon, Vice Chair, committee members. My name is Mitch Hicks. I'm the Chief of Police for the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission. We are one of only two tribal consortiums that have a law enforcement department in the United States. Our mission area is about 700 square miles, encompassing 9 Oregon counties and 3 Washington state counties. Our primary mission is the enforcement of treaty fishing regulations on behalf of 4 Indian tribes, 2 of which are Oregon tribes, that being Umatilla and Warm Springs. Other two tribes that we serve is Yakima Nation in Washington State and the Nez Perce Tribe of Idaho. almost all of the area that we serve is rural. I have been in law enforcement for over 22 years, and the counties in which we work has always been very good partners. Sheriff's offices and others, with their limited staff, look at us as eyes and ears on their behalf as well out in their communities. We have marine assets, boats and so forth, that we patrol the Columbia River with, and so during the periods of the year that the marine programs aren't active, we support the counties and state police in those calls, and free of charge. We don't bill anybody back for those services. As I mentioned, we work in 3 Washington counties, or Washington state counties, 2 of which sheriffs have commissioned us on behalf of their departments to assist them and their officers. Since 2010, we assumed by contract from the Bureau of Indian Affairs criminal policing on a number of tribal community properties that are outside of tribal reservations along the Columbia River, where tribal people live and have access to the Columbia River. So we provide criminal policing at those locations. Our department has been Senate Bill 412 compliant since 2012, although pretty much since the inception of the commission in 1977, the officers that attended the BPSST Academy at the time, and now DPSST. So we've been training alongside other state and local police officers for all of that time as well. Just to kind of wrap this up, one of perhaps in addition to the fishing investigations that we participate in, we currently have a number of investigations that we're partnering with Oregon State Police and NOAA Fisheries, a federal agency, and the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife that we're actively working. One of those will be headed to federal prosecution soon. Last fall, we had a call at one of the communities along the river in Wasco County, where we had the sexual abuse of 3 kids between the ages of 8 and 12. They were non-Indian children. The suspect is a non-Indian family member of enrolled families in the community. But probably this crime would not have been reported, would not have as easily and efficiently been investigated if it were not in the trust that those community members had in their own tribal law enforcement, and for us then to coordinate with Department of Human Services, State Police, and others to complete that investigation. And that prosecution is pending. Like other law enforcement agencies across the country, we're experiencing change in ways that social media and other social aspects have blurred lines between Indian country and other communities, and so crime is crossing these borders regularly. We need to, you know, have the capacity to partner with the local agencies in order to address, you know, both sides of the boundaries. And I think Senate Bill 412 has demonstrated that. So we encourage your support, ask for your support, and the passage of Senate Bill 343. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Woodrow Starr, and I'm an elected member of the Board of Trustees of the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation. Prior to my election, I had worked in law enforcement service with the Bureau of Indian Affairs for over 24 years, and another 8 years before that as a tribal police officer in Oregon and in Washington State. And I appreciate the opportunity to be able to speak here. Senate Bill 343 repeals the Sunset Clause contained in Senate Bill 412. And that legislation authorizes police departments and their officers to meet state standards to exercise the same powers and observe the same duties as their non-tribal police officer counterparts. I'd just like to repeat what you've heard already from our staff in eastern Oregon. We have over 500,000 acres on our reservation, but we only have jurisdiction on about 270,000 of those acres. Our reservation is checkerboard, so we have a lot of land across jurisdiction with our neighbors, and we share that jurisdiction with the county and then also with the state police, as we have a freeway coming through our reservation and then up through the mountains. And I would just like to say that Senate Bill 412 really benefits our tribal members. It benefits our neighbors, all the folks that depend on us. On our reservation and even off our boundaries, we're always the first responders. Our police officers, recently, several years ago, we had a tourist bus that went off the freeway up in the mountains, and it was our police officers that were the first to respond. So I want to say that we do not take this responsibility lightly. The tribal police and our police and their public safety partners have continued since 2011 to examine and collaborate with the statutory responsibility. Do not span. Tribes and other law enforcement partners convened two conferences with the express intent of discussing, understanding, and addressing any challenges arisen from implementation of the 2011 Act. Tribes also commissioned a tribe-by-tribe examination of each tribe's implementation of the Act. Congressionally appointed Indian Law and Order Commission received testimony about SB 412 in a field hearing conducted in Portland. And the Commission's final report commends SB 412 as a model for consideration by other state legislatures and the tribes situated in those states. And then it's been our experience in 2012 that SB 412 has delivered on all of its promise, and none of the feared difficulties have materialized as a result of that. Like any city or county, the tribe invests resources in our police department primarily to protect and serve our own jurisdiction. But criminals do not respect a tribe's jurisdiction boundaries any more than they respect a boundary between a city or a county. A person driving under the influence of intoxicants is just as likely to kill or maim a member of the tribe as they are to crash into a car driven by someone who is not a tribal member. Peace officer status has been a success for our tribe and the surrounding community. That story has played itself out across the state, and with each tribe that employs police officers electing to participate, we encourage your support for lifting the sunset. Thank you.
Thank you. Howard.
Good afternoon, Mr. Vice Chair and members of the committee. My name is Howard Arnett. I'm tribal attorney for the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs. I was involved on behalf of Warm Springs 4 years ago with the legislative process that led to the enactment of Senate Bill 420. 412, and Warm Springs is also the reservation where the court case that led to the legislation arose. So Warm Springs has a particular interest in 412, and I'm primarily here just to answer any legal questions that may arise, but I can report that 412 has worked very well for the Warm Springs Tribal Police Department. They were one of the first tribes to become certified under 412. And one little anecdote I heard from the tribal officers at Warm Springs is that Warm Springs actively participates in an interagency Central Oregon drug enforcement team, and Warm Springs is the only agency with drug dogs in Central Oregon. So when they want to go out on an operation, or whatever they're called exactly, I'm not sure, but the Warm Springs officers and their dogs go along, and the officers now have the authority to take action as well as any other officers on those interagency teams now that they have the 412 authority. So it's worked well at Warm Springs.
Very good. Any questions? Representative Krieger.
Yeah, well, I think the training is, you know, that only can improve everybody's image. Maybe you could kind of update us, our memory a little bit. They talk about the powers and duties off of the reservation. That's stopping anybody on a state highway. Does that mean only someone that you followed off the reservation who committed a crime?
Mm-hmm.
Could you explain, detail that for us?
Well, the court was addressed that way because of the court case that led to the enactment of 412, which involved a hot pursuit that started on the reservation and involved a non-Indian offender, and the actual stop occurred off the reservation between Warm Springs and Madras, and the two crimes with which the defendant was charged were both crimes attempting to elude and resisting arrest. Elements of the crimes involved a police officer, and the problem was that a tribal officer was not considered a police officer under state law, so both the criminal offenses were dismissed. And essentially what 412 did is include tribal officers within the definition of police officers in Oregon, so they can exercise that authority both on the reservation when they need to make arrests of non-Indians over whom the tribe lacks criminal jurisdiction. They can't be sent to tribal court. Those cases can only go to state court. And then in those instances where they happen to be off reservation and the crime occurs, maybe it's observed by a tribal officer, maybe it's a hot pursuit situation. In the case of Warm Springs, they're oftentimes called to traffic accidents on Highway 26 between government camp and the north boundary of the reservation. They're often the first responding agency, and if it appears that a crime has been committed, they're able to take action rather than wait for Clackamas County Sheriff's deputies to get there and those sorts of situations. So those are the circumstances.
I have a follow-up.
Reverse
it. You have a non-tribal police officer off a reservation land coming onto reservation land or Indian land, pursuit of either Native American or non. On that land, then do they have authority to arrest on the reservation lands?
It's a little more complicated. Depends on whether it's a public law 280 reservation or not in Oregon, and there are three reservations that are not subject to public law 280, which is a federal law from the 1950s that extends general state criminal jurisdiction to Indian country in Oregon. Warm Springs is not a public law 280 reservation, so in that instance, if a state officer made an arrest on the reservation for a crime that occurred on the reservation and it was an Indian defendant, that could not go to state court. If it was a non-Indian defendant, it could go to state court. In fact, Oregon State Police do patrol Highway 26 across the Warm Springs Reservation, and they make citations and arrests that go to state court arising on the reservation.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Brad, good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Senator Farioli and Senator Roblin, I've got one more witness here on this one, and then this is going to be really quick. Yeah. So, Patrick, if you come up, then thank you for your patience.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Patrick Singh with the Association of Oregon Counties. We represent all 36 counties, county commissioners, sheriffs, district attorneys, juvenile departments, parole, probation, all which intersect somehow with our tribes in Oregon. 4 years ago, AOC kind of floated somewhere between opposed and neutral on Senate Bill 412 for a number of concerns, including some of the ones have been mentioned regarding reciprocity, jurisdiction, and training. Since the bill's passage, we're pleased to say all of those concerns have been addressed, and we are very supportive of this particular bill repealing the sunset. Representative Post, I think the questions that Senator Thatcher had in committee were whether or not those concerns on reciprocity have been addressed or not. And I think some of the previous witnesses have said that they have been. And there was a provision in the bill that allowed local governments, local police agencies to apply for reciprocity. And as my intelligence says, that no agencies actually did that. However, many of the tribes and local agencies do have cooperating agreements, and they are working well together and training together. And I can even say, on a personal experience in my other life as a reserve police officer, I've had the chance to attend numerous trainings around the state where many tribal police officers have been in attendance, so they are very engaged on the training effort as well. So AOC is very happy to support this bill. Thank you
any
very much.
Questions of Patrick? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, members, we're in work session right now, so.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Ask the question to council. This is just out of curiosity, I think, but could you explain how I was looking for what the sunset repealed. I come to section 26. Could you sort of run section 26 and explain what the heck it does?
So the sunset, the repeal provisions are quite complicated, actually, because there's a mechanism legislative council uses of putting them in and taking them out and then replacing it. So you'll see it throughout here. And that's exactly what it does. And I've actually talked to legislative council about this myself, because it's not very – that's why the bill is so long, because it's a really easy bill. Why do we have, then, 24 pages? And it is merely because of the sunset, the way that goes in and out. But I don't know if I answered your question.
Specifically, what does Section 26 do?
That's what it does, exactly. So – these really suck.
You get attorneys involved, it'll get complicated.
I know. I mean, so, yeah.
In various places, I know it adds tribal police officers to the definition of a peace officer. And I assume that's because it wasn't in...
So what happens is they put one amendment in that's effective immediately and one then later to restore. Then they let that future amendment expire to immediately re-amend to restore. So section 58 was a sunset on itself, and then 26 puts everything back in section 26 that it needed.
Put it back in as reference to the Oregon law 2011.
So the repeal happens in section 58, and then they have to, yeah.
Section 58 of the
chapter 644 of Oregon laws 2011, yeah.
It's kind of like medicine. You know, they take it out and then they put it back in.
It's really quite a messy process, honestly. But that is why the bill is so long, and it's a really good question.
Yep. Anybody want to give me a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 343 to the floor with a due pass.
Okay. Representative Barker moves Senate Bill 343 to the House with the due pass recommendation. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. And we will close public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 343.
I'll carry it.
You're going to carry it?
Yeah. You want to go ahead and do the next one?
Okay, so now we're going to open up a public hearing and a work session on Stand Fast.
448.
Senate Bill 448. And we have two senators.
Okay, so Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee, Senate Bill 448 is sponsored by Senators Farioli and Senator Roblin. We have no revenue impact, no fiscal impact on this bill, and no amendments before us today. The bill unanimously passed the Senate Judiciary Committee, and it passed the full Senate chamber with but one excused vote. So under current Oregon law, the presiding judge of the 22nd Judicial District may, with the approval of the Chief Justice of the Oregon Supreme Court, enter into a memorandum of understanding with the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs to allow youth and youth offenders to be transferred to the Warm Springs Juvenile Court. Eligible youth include those who are enrolled tribal members living on the Warm Springs Reservation, with the exception of those being adjudicated for Measure 11 offenses. The 22nd Judicial District is comprised of the Jefferson and Crook County Circuit Courts. The Warm Springs, however, the reservation surpasses many county lines. So this current situation has left Warm Springs members living on the north side of the reservation, which encompasses Hood River County and Wasco County, without the same opportunity to have youth adjudicated in, have their matters adjudicated in tribal court. So Senate Bill 448 provides consistency across the Warm Springs Reservation to allow youth and youth offenders the same opportunity to have matters transferred to the tribal court system by allowing the presiding judge of the 7th Judicial District, with the approval of the Chief Justice of the Oregon Supreme Court, to enter into an MOU for cases arising in Wasco or Hood River counties. This bill is also ready to move.
Okay, thank you. So, Howard, why don't you come on up and sit up here with the senator? Then, Senator Roblin, if you begin.
So, for the record, Senator Arne Roblin, Senate District 5. This is a bill that I didn't mention this last time. I sit on the LCIS Legislative Committee on Indian Services as a Senate member. Senator Ferraioli is the other member from the Senate that's on that committee. He actually brought this bill and asked if I wanted to, because the two of us were there, to be on it. And I looked it over and said, absolutely. It only makes sense that tribal youth in different parts of the reservation can take advantage of the same opportunity. And I will tell you, from my experience in talking to Senator Ferraioli and other tribal members, the youth may not choose that choice. They might find it easier to not have to sit in front of elders of their tribe and their tribal courts and have judgment passed on them because of their behaviors, other than Measure 11 crimes. But the reality is, it makes for consistency in the tribe, and I think oftentimes changes the behavior of those youth in a much more definitive way with regard to taking into account their culture and the things that are happening. And Warm Springs has done a good job. It has worked with the in the area in which they have the jurisdiction. This bill just adds that jurisdiction to another part of the reservation that allows those youth to have the same opportunity to sit in front of a tribal court for those activities. I urge your I support.
Okay, Howard.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair and committee members. Howard Arnett again, tribal attorney for the Warm Springs Tribe. Just a little bit of the backstory of this legislation. One of the kind of geographic peculiarities of Warm Springs is the reservation is actually in five counties, including Westside counties, Clackamas, Lynn and Marion counties up on the crest of the Cascades, and then Wasco and Jefferson counties. Majority of the reservation is actually in Wasco County, but the entire reservation is part of the Jefferson County 509J school district due to some historic reasons. However, and legislative authority was provided for the Jefferson County court system to refer juvenile cases, which most often arise out of school attendance issues and things that happen in the middle school and high school in Madras, where all of the kids from the Warm Springs Reservation historically have attended public high school. But over the last decade or so, probably two dozen students who live at the far north end of the reservation and around the little hamlet of Semnashu, Oregon, have applied to Jefferson County for permission to attend school in Maupin, South Wasco County Union High School District. It's much closer to their homes than the long bus trip to Madras for middle school and high school, and the Madras School District and the Wasco School District have agreed. So there are probably two dozen tribal member students who attend school in Maupin. Now, if they run afoul of local authorities while attending school in Maupin, they go to court in the Dalles, not Jefferson County. So this bill would provide the same opportunity for those students who end up in Wasco County Juvenile Court to have those cases referred to Warm Springs Tribal Court that now occurs with the students who are in the Jefferson County court system. So that's the purpose of the legislation.
Okay, very good. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. We have a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 448 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barker moves Senate Bill 448 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Seeing no objection, none. So ordered, Senate Bill 448 Public hearing and work session is closed.
Carrier, pick a carrier.
Okay. Who would like to carry it? I'll give an option.
Somebody really good.
I'll take it. Yeah. I'll pressure it.
I move to make Representative Olson chair.
Yeah, I can do that.
Getting along so well.
What about a public hearing, possible work session on Senate Bill 238?
Chair Barker, members of the committee, Senate Bill 238 comes to us from the Office of the Governor for the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. We have no revenue impact and only a minimal fiscal impact on this bill, and we have no amendments before us today. This bill passed both the Senate Judiciary Committee and the Senate Chamber unanimously. The Department of Public Safety Standards and Training serves over 35,000 public safety constituents throughout Oregon. Among DPSST's mission is to uphold professional standards for police, fire, corrections, parole, probation, and telecommunications personnel. Additionally, DPSST licenses private security providers as well as private investigators in the state. So under current Oregon law, public safety agencies must provide DPSST with personnel records of present or past employees for the purposes of investigating the individual's qualifications for employment, training, or certification as a public safety officer. The statute does not, however, currently include private safety agents, and there have at times been problems getting records from those private agencies. Senate Bill 238 includes private safety agencies in the requirements of the statute. The bill authorizes the director of DPSST to apply for a court order to compel compliance with the personnel record request, whether it is to a private or public safety agency. The bill also clarifies that the internal use of a public safety officer's photograph is permitted without the written consent of the public safety officer or his and her employer. The bill also declares an emergency and is effective on passage. It is ready to move.
Okay. Lindsay Hale, please.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. I'm Lindsay Hale, for the record. I'm the Professional Standards Director at DPSST, and quite frankly, I don't think I can add anything to that beautiful summary that you just had. I'm hoping that that frames up what the purpose of this bill is, and as well as the written testimony that I already submitted. I'd be happy to answer any questions anyone has.
I just have one. Could you explain that there was something about the photograph of an officer?
Yeah. Internal use, it says. What does that mean?
I believe that the officer's photographs, and forgive me, I don't have the statute in front of me, but I believe that the officer photographs are exempted from disclosure, specifically in statute, and that's what.
So, Chair Barker, members of the committee, the section one of the bill on page 1, line 9, it adds the word internal, so the subsection does not apply to the internal use, just clarifying that provision. And so to further clarify, we already had the photo matter, but what is maybe interesting to point out is that the bill allows a court order to compel compliance with personal record requests, whether it is to a private or public safety agency. So that's one important aspect.
So at the present time, there's a law that forbids mm-hmm. the release. And does this change that?
It says that if it's for internal use, that is okay.
Okay. Thank you. Questions? Representative Greenlight.
Is there a definition somewhere of a private safety agency?
I believe that it is in ORS 181610, a private safety agency and a public safety agency. It basically, and I'm referring to my memory, but it's essentially an agency that is employing public safety officers.
Employing private safety officers.
Public safety officers. So there are a very small handful of agencies that employ certified emergency medical dispatchers and fire service personnel as well, who are considered public safety officers by definition.
Is that 181675?
I believe it's 181610.
But an employee of a private safety agency is a public safety employee?
Representative Greenlick, the definition extends to private safety agencies that employ public safety officers. So again, it's just a small handful of agencies that would employ a certified medical emergency medical dispatcher or a fire service personnel officer by definition.
So the Chair Barker, Representative Greenlick, it says in sub 16 of the statute section, it's 181.610 exactly, public or private safety agency means a unit or state or a local government, a special purpose district, or a private firm that provides or has authority to provide firefighting, police, ambulance, or emergency medical service.
Are employees in emergency medical service public employees? An EMT employed by an ambulance company, is that a public employee?
It can be.
Can
public or private safety agency, yes, if they are a unit of state or local government with special purpose.
Well, this is a private firm,
private.
Included in your, what you read.
Do you have an example of
Yes, Chair Barker. Emergency medical dispatcher is also defined in ORS 181610. If somebody is employed who is fulfilling that definition, they are required to be certified by DPSST. And there is a handful of private ambulance companies who employ people to provide those services of an emergency medical dispatcher. That's where the private safety agencies, they're bound by the requirements as employers of public safety officers, which in this case an emergency medical dispatcher would be. And the same with fire agencies. There are some rural private fire protection agencies that employ fire service officers that are required to meet the standards set by DPSST.
Representative Langer.
Thanks. You know, I was trying to figure out what an example is, and I think Clackamas County contracts with AMR Ambulance Service, which I think is a private company, that might be an example, and maybe Metro West, which works in some other parts of the state.
Yeah, but the question is, are the EMTs that work from AMR, which by that definition sounds like they would be public employees?
I think they're private employees.
Yeah.
But the dispatcher is the dispatcher.
No,
would
but
be,
the definition she read included emergency personnel, right?
So a public or private safety agency means, so we're talking about the agency,
right,
means a unit or state or local government, a special purpose district, or a private firm that provides or has authority to provide firefighting, police, ambulance, or emergency medical services. So public safety personnel and public safety officer includes corrections officers, youth correction officers, emergency medical dispatchers, parole and probation officers, police officers, certified reserve officers, telecommunications, liquor enforcement inspectors, and fire service professionals, and it does not specify there.
So the dispatcher would be the public employee.
Be the only public employee.
I believe. Okay. And Representative Krieger, did you have a question?
Well, I just was wondering, going back to the internal use of a public safety officer's photograph, give me an example of that.
Off the top of my head, Representative Krieger, we take class photos of all of the students who come in for basic training. Occasionally, there's cause to have to refer to those internally. I can't give you an example. I don't know that it happens often, but we do have that are retained with the rest of the class documents, class photos of every class. So what we do, I don't want to say frequently, but sometimes get requests from the media for those photos, and we do not release them under that exemption.
They would still be protected now?
Yes.
Unless the officer says it's okay.
Okay.
Further questions? Don't leave because we have the next bill.
Okay.
We'll go into a work session on Senate Bill 238.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 238 to the House floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves Senate Bill 238 to the House floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Olson, you want to carry that one for us, please?
Certainly.
Okay. Open a public hearing, possible work session on Senate Bill 239.
So Chair Barker, members of the committee, Senate Bill 239 also comes to us from the Office of the Governor for the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. We have no revenue impact and no fiscal impact on this bill. It unanimously passed the Senate Judiciary Committee, and it did have one nay vote on the Senate chamber floor. We have no amendments before us today as well. So according to the Oregon Association of Reserve Peace Officers, there's an estimated 1,300 reserve officers currently working in the state, many of whom serve serve on a volunteer basis and may serve in rural areas. DPSST reports that reserve officers undergo strenuous training using the same standards as for full-time officers. Current Oregon law includes reference to certified reserve officers, but does not include a reference to just reserve officers. But at present, there is not a formal certification process for reserve officers at this time. So as such, reserve officers are unintentionally omitted from some OR sections. Senate Bill 239 explicitly adds reserve officer to the definition of public safety personnel and public safety officer, so that ORS language includes references to both certified reserve officers, which don't currently exist, and reserve officers. Additionally, Senate Bill 239 adds reserve officers to the definition of commissioned, as well as the minimum employment age requirement of 21 years of age. And finally, the Senate Bill 239 removes reserve officers from the current statutory exemption for minimum standards and minimum training. This bill is also ready to move.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. I'm hopeful that my written testimony submitted also frames this up, so I'll keep this brief. Senate Bill 239 is before you on behalf of the Board on Public Safety Standards and Training. It recently came to their attention the lack of jurisdiction.
Can you say your name one more time?
Lindsay Hale, DPSST. Apologies. It recently came to the board's attention the lack of jurisdiction the board and the department has to require agencies conduct background checks prior to uniforming and arming reserve officers in the state. As Laura mentioned, there is a distinction between a certified reserve officer and a reserve officer. The board does have authority over certified reserve officers. However, that program's never been funded, so there are no certified reserve officers in the state currently. Senate Bill 239 adds reserve officers to the definition of public safety officer, thereby giving the board the authority to set and enforce minimum standards. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Any questions?
Any other questions? Does it make a reserve officer the same as a regular peace officer across the board in all statutes?
I don't believe it deals with the peace officer definition at all. This is just granting the board authority to set minimum standards for their utilization in the state.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Move to a work session on Senate Bill 239.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 239 to the House floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves Senate Bill 239 to the floor with the due pass. Is there any discussion?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I read this, the reserve officers going into the definition of public safety personnel would not expand the category of victims that would make would impact the death penalty.
Yeah,
and so
correct.
I just want to make sure that that's how I read this. I want to make sure that's the case.
That's my understanding.
Okay. So I will vote yes now, okay. But I want a little bit more time. But as I read it, it doesn't impact that. So
it does not. Okay. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Krieger, would you carry that bill for us, please?
Okay.
Open a public hearing, possible work session on Senate Bill 614.
Yes, Chair Barker, members of the committee. Senate Bill 614 is sponsored by Senators Knope and Senator Courtney, who I believe will be here momentarily. We have no revenue impact and only a minimal fiscal impact on this bill. The bill unanimously passed the Senate Judiciary Committee, and it passed the full Senate with all aye votes and one excused vote. We have no amendments before us today. So current Oregon law provides that peace officers may enter a premises with a search warrant when the officer has probable cause to believe an animal is being subjected to treatment in violation of certain ORS sections. Current law, however, does not contain provisions to allow for officers to enter in a motor vehicle. Senate Bill 614 clarifies the law to provide the same protection to peace officers when the animal is contained in a vehicle as they have when an animal is contained in a building. The bill is ready to move today.
Good afternoon.
Senator, come on up. Do you want
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
Oh, do you want me to start?
Sure.
My name is State Senator Tim Knope. I am from Bend and represent Bend, Redmond, Tumalo, and Sun River in Senate District 27. Colleagues, today we're here for a serious issue. I just wanted to show you a picture. This is a hot dog car on the top, and the lower photo is a hot dog in a car. This bill is about neither. This bill is about dogs left in hot cars. So I just want to make sure that we are all on the same page, because there was confusion in the Senate, so we had to clarify.
We believe that. Yeah.
In the House, however, we recognize the brain power on this particular committee is substantial. And so really what we're here today about is seeing if we can't go about affecting the opportunity to save some animals that are left in hot cars. And, you know, this happens on a fairly regular basis, and it isn't intentional. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, people are driving around with their pet, they forget, they don't crack a window, and what happens is there's too many deaths of these pets that could be saved. And so really this bill extends the right of a police officer to enter a motor vehicle to rescue an animal when the officer believes there's probable cause, that's important, that the animal is being subjected to mistreatment. In other words, it's on its last legs, as it were. Senator Courtney and I brought this bill forward at the request of one of my constituents. And it was very specific, and she was very passionate about this issue. And so I wanted to make sure that we did everything we could to save these animals. And as you know, the temperature in a car rises very rapidly. So within 15 minutes, you're well over 100 degrees on a hot day and up to 120 degrees. And that is an excruciating death for a pet, obviously anyone, but I don't think anyone would want their pet to be subjected to that. And so what we really wanted to do is we drafted a very narrow bill. There's a lot of constitutionalists on the Senate side as well that were very concerned about police powers, and as am I, and we wanted to make sure that it was very narrow in scope, and we believe it is. And therefore, I believe it passed out like 29 or 30 to nothing. I can't remember the number, but I just remember that there was no opposition. And I kind of, quite frankly, had expected a little bit because if you I think if you just read the bill on its face, you might think, oh, you know, this is expanding police powers. In reality, what it does is it's very narrowly tailored to the probable cause issue. You know, so an officer can't just break into a car. So I'd be happy to answer any questions after all the testimony is done, if you have any, especially about my photos. I'd be happy to.
Hey, thank you. Agent Wallace.
Chairman Barker, members of the committee, my name is Austin Wallace, and I'm currently the only Oregon special agent employed to investigate animal neglect and abuse for the Oregon Humane Society, which, of course, we're not affiliated with any local or national organization. Basically, I'd like to, you know, mirror the same comments made, that this is basically just to clean up the statute to include motor vehicles as well as premise or private properties. You know, last year, the first hot day that we had, I think it was 80 plus degrees, and I was tasked with dealing with a white truck with a dog inside the vehicle in the middle of an open parking lot with a trucker who was in Madras and not going to make it back to attend to his dog. And it's certainly a situation where we would like to not have to hover and try to determine how do we proceed if it's not a part of the current statute. This is certainly a law that I think that, you know, 10 out of 10 people watching an animal sitting in a 80, 90 degree day would agree that we would like to have the ability to not have to try to piece together how we handle these situations, that we'd like to act upon it. And oftentimes that would be without the ability of having the time to apply for a search warrant, which is a lengthy process.
Okay. Question, Representative Post.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Quick question for Senator Canope. Senator Canope, I have been waiting all day to talk about this bill. I you answered my question, so I'll let sleeping dogs lie.
Very good. Yeah. What, do you have a
Widener
here on the committee?
No, I wanted to show the brain power of the House side. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes?
Is it safe to assume a police officer can enter a car if a child is in that same situation?
Absolutely.
Yes, it is. And, you know, Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlick, I've had people actually complain a little bit about the fact that we would be giving kind of equal status to animals as we do humans. And my point was is that it's still a life. It is still somebody's pet. And so in order to make it equal, are we to allow the animal to die? And I think not. I mean, I think if we have the opportunity as human beings to save the life of an animal, wouldn't we do that as well as, I mean, obviously, I think most people say, hey, let's save the human being first. But, I mean, when we have a pet in a car by itself and it is struggling and it is clear that it's going to die if we don't intervene, you know, why not? So the answer to your question is, yes, they do.
And Chair Barker, Representative Greenlake, I would also add that this bill provides protections to the police officer to make sure that the Fourth Amendment issue on this matter is a little bit of a gray issue. So somebody could bring suit. So this would provide further protections to against those kinds of lawsuits, which are very expensive.
And thank you. And I tried to work with the Humane Society on this. I had a constituent also who had the same concerns, and we were trying to figure out what was a hot day. And that's, you just can't do it. So what this does will allow, if an officer sees a problem, they think it's with probable cause, believe it's a real problem, they can go ahead and pop a window and not be liable for it to get the, you know, hopefully save the animal. So
I just, you know, one thought. I mean, whoever gets the opportunity to carry this bill, I would suggest they get together with the senator for those.
For those photographs. Yeah.
I think I know who's carrying it now.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there let's see. Well, thank you for your testimony. Senator Courtney wanted to testify, and he can't be here for a few more minutes, so I'm going to suspend the hearing, and we'll stand down until he gets here for testimony. But
thank you.
Thank you very much. Put the committee at ease, please.
I don't know. God, all the heat is at all.
Committee's back in session. Senator Courtney, please.
Chair Barker and Vice Chair Olson and Vice Chair Williamson, members of the House Judiciary Committee. I didn't know you met up here. I thought you met over there.
I wish we did, but I...
You too.
That's Truby. We used to meet over there.
We did.
Do you know where that is?
I do know.
Why aren't you over there?
Because we gave that to Republicans when we were 30-30, and the Speaker, for some reason, won't ask for it back.
Careful.
Please remember.
Who signed a petition with us?
Who is this handsome gentleman?
That's what I remember.
My name is Peter Courtney. I'm going to tell you who I am. I just don't want to rush. I'm a state senator, District 11, which includes this building. What's this bill? Portions of Salem, and then it goes up to Jervis and Woodburn. And I received a phone call, strangely, from an individual named Senator Tim Canope. Actually, I did not receive it from him. My staff received it from his office saying, would you like to sign on a bill involving animals in cars? And so I said yes, because I do have a history with the welfare of animals over the years I've been here. And when I realized what this Senate Bill 614 was all about, I said, really, I really want to get in there and support this piece of legislation. Not having been here when the Honorable Senator Tim Canope testified, I don't like to repeat anything that people say, but as you know, the law enforcement community would allow them to intervene when an animal is suffering in a motor vehicle. Now, I think what that means is they can break into the car. They can break the window. Let's not fool around here, these word intervention. We're not talking about messing around. You get in the car and get the animal out of here. So I do want that on the record. If it's wrong, you better correct it, because I don't want somebody going to jail because of something I said here on the record. Now, I understand that our research shows the following, and I hope you didn't say this. Cars heat up in the sun. That's a given. I know Oregonians tend to forget this during our winter months. But the fact is that according to a Stanford study, that would be Stanford University, a car in as low as 72 degrees weather will heat up on an average of 40 degrees in an hour. 80% of that increase happens within the first 30 minutes. That means on a 72 degree day, the inside of a car can reach 104 degrees in 30 minutes. A dog's body temperature is between 101 and 102.5 degrees. It's obvious that is even a short time leaving a dog in a car can become a life-threatening situation very fast. Law enforcement should be able to intervene when they come across such a situation. It's a common sense bill. I am very pleased that the Honorable Senator Tim Knope from all of Bend was willing to introduce Senate Bill 614. He worked very hard on the Senate side to get it out of the committees, as well as to move it to the Senate floor, where it received a strong bipartisan vote. So I hope that the Honorable, esteemed House Judiciary Committee will, in its individual and collective wisdom, move Senate Bill 614 to the House floor for hopefully a positive and rewarding and victorious vote. Thank you, House Judiciary Committee.
I would just say that while we forget about the sun in the winter on the west side, over in Senator Knope's district, they have a lot more sun, a lot more days. So maybe apply better over there. So any questions of the good senator? Thank you very much.
Could I ask you a question, Chair, before you dismiss me?
I'm afraid to say yes, but I will anyway.
Thank you, Your Honor. So the Speaker always makes me wait to see her. So I go on the House floor, and I sit down right in front of where the podium is, where it's nice soft seat. I look out on the array of your House desk. In the, not this session, but in the session before that, I gave each one of you a hand-sewn Oregon flag, because no such flags like that exist. You cannot get them. They don't make them. If you go down to the gift stores, you know their Oregon flag is a phony flag. It's not an Oregon, because it doesn't have the beaver on the one side. It just has the state seal. So I look out. I take it very put on the floor, and I see one individual who has replaced the Oregon flag with the United States Marine Corps flag.
No.
Now, I just want to say, I wanted to be a Marine. I was at Quantico training to be a Marine officer, and then if bone spurs in the flat fleet, they sent me home because I wanted. But I got to ask you, Chair Barker, why is it you replaced that Oregon flag? I mean, why did you do that for? Do you want me to give you another one? I will, even though I haven't got many left. They were not paid, Representative Post, with taxpayers' money. I paid for them by my own money. I bought those 200 flags. You only do it. So I have to ask you, Chair Barker, I was going to try to refrain. But that just happened to me an hour ago, and I have been in therapy since then. Why did you do that with that flag?
I still have your flag in my office.
Well, that's not. I didn't give you a flag for your office, Chair Barker. I gave it to you for your House desk.
I'm a Marine, and so
I'm very proud of you. I love the Marines. You know I love the Marines.
Yes, once a Marine, always a Marine. The Commandant a couple times ago said, you're still a Marine. You're just in a new assignment. So I'm
all right.
The Marine on the floor.
I'll take a flag. Yeah. I'll take a flag.
You have one on your desk.
He wasn't here when you did that.
No, I wasn't here.
The new
guy.
Yeah.
But that's true. I did not give you, Chair Barker, Representative Post. That is correct. I did not. That's right. It didn't occur to me right now because I do have some flags left over, and I never gave them to the members, new members of the Senate or the House. That's right. So I do have to go back. I am in error, Your Honor. And I do have to go back and correct that. And, Your Honor, I will do that. But I'm not giving you another flag.
Okay. I'm not replacing the Marine flag, so that'll work out well for both of us. Thank you.
I do have the squeeze toys, though, and I use them every day.
All right.
So, yeah, the squeeze toys. That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Okay, thank you, Senator.
Wow. Let me move this.
Yeah, work session on Senate Bill 614.
Okay, well, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 614 to the House floor with due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves Senate Bill 614 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Greenleck will convene the carrier.
Thank you, Mr.
Greenleck's got it.
I thought you adjourned.
I thought you were going to talk to him about Jermaine.
Adjourned.
I thought you were going to talk to him about Jermaine.